years and years ago, people used to say, a song said, I can't believe what you say, because I see what you do. And that's where America is now.
Welcome to a Cambridge Forum broadcast featuring America's most amazing writer, James Baldwin, the author of such works as Go Tell It on the Mountain, The Fire Next Time, and Notes of a Native Son, just newly released by Beacon Press. Speaking at the Harbor Campus of the University of Massachusetts, Boston, Mr. Baldwin's subject is Black Writers in White America.
I hardly know how to begin. I have been teaching, one would say. Visiting professor is the elegant phrase for the role I'm playing, but it's really, I call it writer in captivity, which is closer to the truth. And I've been fascinated by I'm making discoveries, because actually teaching is a form of learning. The one thing I've been most struck by, I must say, is that I came back here to do what I'm doing, really, to find out what is happening here. And I had been warned that the young were very apathetic, that they didn't really care about values, and they were unapproachable or inaccessible. This has not been my experience at all. And I don't know what young people I was talking to were talking about. The young don't remain young long, that's true. But there is a period when a person is validly young. And the people I've been dealing with, or who've been dealing with me, are anything but apathetic. They can be very discomforting. They ask real questions, which always embarrasses a grown-up, and want to know something about themselves, and something about the world in which they live, and something about their responsibility for this most peculiar society. Something about their future, because they do have the sense, and they're quite right, that the future must belong to them. In my dealings with the young, or in their dealings with me, I discovered that they very often feel alienated, because what this country says it honors, it doesn't. Someone said a long time ago, I don't remember who it was, what is honored in a country is cultivated there. Now, if you apply this touchstone to American life, it is somewhat dispiriting what you're compelled to conclude. It would seem, though this is an oversimplification, that if one is honored in a country, is cultivated there, then this country honors at bottom two things. One of them, of course, is money, or the dream of money, and the other is the absolute necessity of being mediocre. No other country in the world rewards mediocrity so extravagantly. It's absolutely true. From Washington to Hollywood, to leave it at that, for the moment. Now, since I've been posing as a professor, and I've been working in an educational system or institution, I have become a little worried about what Americans have in mind when they speak of education. Not only Americans, by the way, but this is my country, and I have a right to say about it what I please, because I love it. It would seem to me that a university exists in order to teach you about the universe, in order to teach you to ask questions, in order to give you the courage to go from question to question and distrust every answer, to recognize in a certain way that every answer is provisional, It may or may not stand the test of time. It may or may not stand the test of experience. And if one is very honest with oneself, to realize that every answer hides a question, and not to be afraid of the question that the answer hides. In this way, one begins to, I think, have some sense of the world around one and one's own position in this world and one's own responsibilities in one's society. The trouble with that vision or idea of education is it creates what no society and no state and no church has ever really wanted to see. It creates an independent mind. It may seem a little rude to put it this way, but in fact, in practice, neither the church nor the state are really concerned about the individual's conduct. What the powers that be, the state or the church, are really interested in is not how you live, but that you should be certain to feel guilty about it. As long as you feel guilty about it, you'll make a good citizen and a good soldier. I'm putting it this way because I think it is time to put it this way. This is a fascinating year, as we all know, and great decisions are going to be made this year, which will have far-reaching consequences. Therefore, the idea of education begins to be absolutely crucial to the survival of this country, and especially to the survival of the young. It is criminal, I think, to teach young people that there are limits, that there are taboos, that anything is, in a sense, forbidden, that any question is forbidden. One has to, in this life, move through it, asking oneself one's questions, trying to deal with others as you want them to deal with you, trying to accept the fact that no matter how much we find out, there is something we will never know. However one puts it, within the church or outside a church, every human being born has some sense that he or she is not only he or she, and that this life is a moment. We are all involved in something we don't really understand. Some people call it God. I don't really have a word for it. But I do know that something in me knows that we can be better than we are. People become wicked partly out of panic, partly out of laziness. It is easier, for example, to accept the slogans this country offers as its identity. Easier to do that, it would seem, than to regard the country and ourselves as we really are. We refer, for example, to the civil rights movement of the 60s. And people refer to this movement, it has always struck me, as being something unprecedented in American history and something which is now behind us. The truth is that the civil rights movement began on the day that I entered the new world, the Christian world, on an auction block. It is that old. It is of stunning importance. No one ever wishes to look at this. But the history of the American black man, history of his civilization in the West, begins on the auction block. The auction block itself, all by itself, is not a condemnation of the so-called Christian world. worse than that. Not only is it a condemnation of the Christian world, it is a negation of something which everybody really knows. There's no way not to know it. No one was ever born who wanted to be a slave. No one was ever born who was able really to make his or her peace with it anywhere. And everyone overlooks that the famous Declaration of Independence was modified by Thomas Jefferson by property holders, and that the document specifically refuses to outlaw slavery. This is the beginning of the country. Furthermore, it is not true that this country was settled by freedom-loving heroes. It is not true. Nobody who came here wanted to come here. The only difference between myself and so-called white people is I knew I didn't want to come. And by the way, it is not true that in that vast dark age before Europe discovered me, I was sitting in Africa waiting to be discovered. I had a lot of things occupy my mind, believe me. And I was not waiting for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer to send Johnny Weissmuller out to convert me and bring me to the back lot, where I am still. It would be more useful to bear in mind something that people don't like to look at either. The people who came here, who now call themselves white, were not white before they got here. They were English, they were French, they were Spanish, they were Greek, they were Irish, they were Polish. There were many, 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 many things, but none of them were white. They're not white yet. I dare anyone in this country to prove he's white. I dare you. It's all a myth. And the color white was invented to justify the black subjugation. Only for that reason, nothing else. To justify slavery, the white man had to become white. And such is the power of a myth that this, which began as a commercial endeavor, I was property. I was once defined by the American Constitution as 3/5 of a man. And this has dictated American policy from the beginning. And this has corrupted American history until this hour. And it shows in every one of our institutions, from the college to the White House. And it is time to look at that. People are still dreaming of coming to this country where they can be free. That is a myth. And it's a very valuable myth. But I think that we have betrayed it. And I'll tell you something else. It's almost how we betrayed it. Speaking now as a black American, and a man no longer young. My brother pointed out once a very vivid image, my baby brother. He had a ladder in his house lying against the wall. And he said, America's like this. You see that ladder? I'm the bottom ladder, David said. I'm the bottom ladder. The black man in this country is the bottom. And everybody comes to this country has a step on that ladder. And everybody who comes to this country does step on that ladder, which keeps, as we like to say, the Negro in his place. That's how we betrayed it. That's how we betrayed it. And the bill has come in for that betrayal. One can say, for example, that the most real achievement of the Western world, the most unanswerable achievement of the Western world, is to have brought humanity to the edge of oblivion. And if this is so, and it is so, then it is time to overhaul ourselves and look at how we got here before we blow ourselves away. People are more important than things. And I think it is obscene, with a country starving, with populations all over the world starving, that we use our money to put hardware in space and to stockpile bombs which, if ever used, can only be used once. I have not the remotest interest, for example, in space. I am interested, however, in seeing that my children eat all over the world. And we can do that. We would be able to do that if we were not trapped in our history. How does one spring the trap? I have no blueprints. I'm only making suggestions. But it seems to me that every community and those people who are responsible in every community, the minister, the teacher, everybody, really, has to ask himself, herself, how did we get to this place? It's been a very strange and difficult place, very dangerous place. Ignorance rules in this country as never before, making this a very dangerous place for everybody. When it was simply dangerous for me, it seemed to be simply dangerous because I was black. But years and years and years ago, my mother pointed out to me two things. First of all, she solved the whole question of morals, in a sense, but, you know, the question of my relationship to white people and the so-called white people, by saying to me that Christians don't own slaves. So that was resolved for me. It was, okay, that was clear. The other thing was not so clear, the danger in which a black person walked. Every black kid comes home one morning, one afternoon, one day. He's not older than 7. And he comes home and he asks his mama, not looking at his mother. He says, "Mama, what's a nigger?" And the silence that follows that question scares the kid for the first time in his life. Because the silence that follows the question proves some enormous danger he's walking in. And it also brings home to him the suspicion that his mother has been waiting for this question since she brought him into the world. Her silence makes his danger real. Whatever the mother says has to be inadequate. Because now he begins to understand something. And he embarks on that journey. I embarked on it. I'm sure every black person in this country has had to embark on it. That terrible journey of something which can hardly be called despair because the kid's too young, but the young can be in despair, and it seems then to be forever. When you're young, everything happens. Everything that happens is happening forever. It begins that journey of wonder, self-hatred, then hatred, then fear, then rage, then madness, and without something unnameable, which I'll try to get to in a moment, the kid goes under before he's 20. I'm not exaggerating. Most do not. My friend Alvin Murray points out. Most do not. And that brings us to an enormous question, which is this. I come from a place in the Western mind which is despised by history. I was told when I was growing up by people who should have known better that I had no history. It was once law in this country that a black man had no rights which a white man was bound to respect. That was the law. We are on the edge of a terrifying paradox. I, who come from no place, who have no history, despised by history, we are still not in the history books, because the textbook industry is a billion-dollar industry, for one thing. That's why we have Black History Month. And so black history were different from American history. It's a terrible thing to deny your history. It catches up with you. The paradox I'm pointing out here, though, I'm trying to get to this, is that a people despised by history, coming out of chaos into chaos, have somehow, on the North American continent, forged an identity unprecedented in the history of the world. No one knows how we did it. And the people who came here with their history, gleaming, as it were, spotless, as it were, noble, as it were, are now lost in a history they never understood because they've always lied about it. I hazard, but you can correct me later if you think I'm wrong, that on balance, even when the worst has been said, the black American in this country is the only person in this country who has any real sense of who he is, who has any real sense that life is more than things, and it is also more than pain. It is more than the American aspirations want to make you believe life is. We have a common inheritance, birthright, which is also our duty. White Americans, in the generality, have not accepted that birthright because they think something else is more important. The birthright is a very simple one, but it imposes a tremendous duty. The birthright is to love one another. That's quite enough to manage to do in a lifetime. If that is your touchstone, you are saved from certain kinds of folly. You are saved from the necessity of buying a new car every year, to leave it at that. And you may, if you accept your birthright, have cause to ask yourself how the society got to be what it is, and more crucially, even in this particular year, to ask oneself precisely how we arrive at our representatives. I think it may be time to look very hard at that, to find out who really runs this country, to whom this country really belongs, who's it run for, and where do they come from, these candidates? Because it seems to me, someday somebody should do a study of the morality of a consumer society. Because it does have a morality, a vicious morality. But the way we live now is as a consumer society, and this corrupts all our values. So that it seems, so very often seemed to me, that the American populace in general is so narcotized They just as they buy Kellogg's Corn Flakes and Wonder Bread because they see it on television. And whatever car it is because they see it on television. And whatever cat food it is because they see it on television. And whatever else they do because they see it on television. Every 4 years, somebody bankrolls people we call politicians, package them, put them on television, and we go for the brand name, the name most successfully sold to us. As apathetic as that, and as immoral as that. And then one wonders what is happening to the young. Then one wonders why they are, as the elders like to put it, apathetic. I can tell you why they seem to be apathetic. They seem to be apathetic because they've been betrayed by their elders. That's the truth. Children don't want to be safe. They want to be loved. They want to be respected. And they want to be able to respect their elders. And if a child cannot do that, nothing can replace that. And that child is lost. I don't care how many cars he has, or how many girlfriends, or how many football fields he runs. He has no anchor. He can only get that from his elders. And the elders of America have betrayed their children. That's the truth. How we get past this, because we must get past it, is an enormous question. I don't know. I have no answers. But it is time to ask some very difficult questions. The Chinese have a curse, I'm told. When they want to curse you, they say, may you live in interesting times. Well, we have a point. We are certainly living through some interesting times. But the point is we have to live through them and not go under. I think it is very important for everyone to remember that this century ends in 16 years. But the time has run out on our pretensions. Time is calling us on what we really believe. I would like to leave you with that. So thank you very much.